to rouse and create an ecstatic admiration and demand for something. To me, that's the business we're in. We are rousing audiences and working to create their ecstatic admiration and demand for that which we produce. So I want them to be ecstatic about coming to school here, working here, moving here, partnering with us, buying our season tickets, whatever it may be. That to me is marketing, is to enchant on those levels versus just have it put out in the world and land.
Hey, welcome to the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast on the EdUp Experience Podcast Network. This is a show dedicated to helping higher ed marketers tell better stories, create better content, and enroll more students. My name's John Azzoni. I'm the founder at Unveiled, and we're a video production company working specifically with college marketing teams to make it easy for them to scale up and even automate their student and alumni success stories through our subscription approach. And you can learn more about that at unveiled.tv, and that's UNVEILD.TV. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, go ahead and subscribe. We'd love to have you. And if you're wanting your college and university's content to resonate on a deeper emotional level with prospective students, with alumni, with parents, whatever, I want you to subscribe to my free newsletter. Every week I send out tips and insights on creating more emotionally resonant content, including examples and best practices from other institutions, articles and blog posts, that week's podcast episode, and much more. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. All right, let's get on with the show. All right, my guest today is Ethan Braden. Ethan is Vice President and Chief Marketing and Communications Officer at Texas A&M University. Today, we're talking about, among other things, five priorities for marketing and branding growth that Ethan has established within his role and what those mean for the university. So, Ethan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's start off on a little personal note. Just tell us something people might be surprised to know about you.
I think amidst all the time I've spent in the Midwest, I'm born and raised and a proud product of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I don't find a lot of those folks. So
anytime did you watch Breaking Bad?
I cherish Breaking Bad. My grandmother was six blocks from where Walt's house is on the show, and we would go visit it and the dam and Taco Sal. And I used to get my truck washed at that car wash. It was called the Octopus, not the AAA or whatever they call it on the show.
Really?
It was the Octopus, and it's still there.
That's a real car wash?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I watched the series for the first time like a year or so ago. So I was like very late to the game. So it's more fresh in my mind.
Yeah. The taco place is right across the street. So those are all real places.
Is there an actual like chicken place?
It's a Twisters. So they make this is real healthy. They make these burritos, these giant burritos, and then they cover them in French fries. And so There's a Twisters in the South Valley that they took over for Pollos Hermanos. So yeah, it's you can go see it. They've got the artwork on the wall.
Interesting. And you thought you didn't have anything, interesting to reference here.
It's best I got.
So, all right. So tell us, because you came from, Purdue, coming to Texas A&M. So tell us, I knew you from your Purdue days. Tell us about kind of that journey from Purdue to Texas A&M.
Yeah, I started here at Texas A&M on December 1st. So it's been 4 months and it's been an incredible experience so far. This is a special place with very special Aggies. And I think the draw was a few things. One, an incredible brand that the nation and the world don't know enough about. And so I had a terrific boss at Eli Lilly and Company where I was there for a decade. And he used to say, take roles where there's plenty of clay to mold something beautiful. And there is tons of clay here in College Station at Texas A&M University. So the opportunity to capture and mold and beautify what we have here and show it to the world and say, you know, did you know this is an incredible challenge. And it was similar to that, which I found at Purdue. We built an incredible team there. And as Mitch Daniels used to quote Ronald Reagan and saying, you know, always keep on wanting more. I thought it was about the right time to move on and pass the baton.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about it, I think, in one of the subsequent questions. But one of the major draws and driving forces of coming here is also the leadership. General and President Mark Welsh is an amazing leader who I wanted to work for and serve and learn from. And I was very excited about that opportunity.
So did you know about him before you came over to Texas A&M or?
Not whatsoever.
All right. So what makes him so special?
Four-star general. And he's just an incredible man. I saw his speech at one of the most terrific traditions that we have here at Texas A&M, which is called Muster, which is a remembrance for the Aggies worldwide who have passed that year. Mm. And he gave the speech a couple of years ago, and he was talking about a mission or a trip he was on in the Air Force. So four-star general, former Joint Chief of Staff of the Air Force during Obama. And at one point in time, he says, there's a lot of people on this earth who like to consider themselves a badass. But when it comes to Mark Welsh, he doesn't have to consider anything. He wrote the book. He's an incredible man, fighter pilot, leader, commanded 665,000 in the Air Force over a 40-year career.
Wow.
And came to a school that he didn't attend, but that he loves, and has had 15 family members attend, including his father and five of his six siblings and all four of his kids, and served as the dean of the Bush School here, a very special school of public service here at Texas A&M University, and then was named president at the end of last year. So working from him, learning from him, a true level five leader, humble, visionary, decent. I jump out of bed each morning to get here and serve his administration.
I love that. I love how well you speak of him. That must be, that's a sign of a great leader. So I understand you have kind of, five-ish sort of priorities when it comes to, you know, managing marketing communications at Texas A&M that you're kind of implementing. We talked in our pre-call about, building a world-class MarCom team, having a comprehensive insight-based, competitively positioned and emotive brand platform. Having associated assets that everyone can access and execute the marketing plan, creating a marketing community, uniting and cultivating it, and then national earned media strategy. So I thought we could just unpack those one by one, if you're cool sure. with that. So let's start with building a world-class MarCom team. Like, where do you start with that when you're especially coming into a new organization? Where do you even begin?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this great Deming quote where he says every system is perfectly engineered to get the results that it gets. And so for me, it's starting with the end in mind and determining what those results are that we need, and then building the team and the seats on that bus, so to speak, with that in mind. And then from there, staffing it accordingly and appropriately. We have a goal here, which is that central marketing, much like it became at Purdue University, will become the driver of inspiration, of engagement, of recognition, of reputation and prosperity at Texas A&M, not the driven short order cook of random acts of promotion. And so creating a team that has that ethos, both with excellence and expertise in what it does, but not only understands the mission of A&M, but it's on a mission to serve A&M, is the type of team that we want to build here in the future. And I think it's the team that Texas A&M and our former students and this brand completely deserve. And so it's with that in mind that we want to build it.
So talk about the driving versus being driven, and this concept, like how does being driven play out at some schools that maybe you've witnessed, and what does that look like in contrast to being the drivers of vision?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's your orientation towards marketing, and at Eli Lilly and Company in particular, that's where I learned this idea of a brand really being the driver of an exceptional customer experience, the driver of our messaging, the driver of creating, changing, and sometimes reinforcing attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors with target audiences to create the desired experiences that the place has. And so, you know, the driven is the short order cook, right? The driven is the comms model of the past. It's as my predecessor at Purdue used to say, it's the organization that's driven to create the local chicken dinner flyers, you know, for the School of Agriculture versus the driver that is really focused on enchanting external target audiences to feel differently about the place, to demand the place, to have an affinity for the place. And those sort of leaders go first. They're empowered and they're enabled to drive prosperity and growth with that in mind and make a material contribution to the organization, not just spread marketing dust. And so this notion and this orientation of driver for me motivates and it orients us to what we should be doing and oftentimes what we should be saying no to.
Yeah. And I talked in a couple episodes ago on this podcast, talked about working with videographers, working with in-house teams. And one of the points that we made was just something that I noticed from being friends with a lot of in-house videographers at various colleges, is that they get, you know, the college says, okay, we're going to do this video stuff. We're going to hire a videographer. And we've checked the box. Now all the marketing requests are going to go through this videographer. And what happens is they just end up doing all the sort of whatever's yelling the loudest, whoever wants something, no priorities, just, you know, the nursing department needs a promo and this, they need a promo. It's like, you get a video.
Right.
And then like what happens to all the forward pushing storytelling and the brand building stuff that happens, oftentimes that just kind of takes a back seat. It's like when some capacity opens up for an order taker.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I, Dave Gerhart, you know, formerly of Drive and Privy, and now of, he'll hate me for forgetting it. Exit Five, I guess is what it's called up in the Northeast. He has this great term. He says, instead of focusing on building a marketing department, instead build a media company for your niche. And I like that sort of delineation of the media company thinks about it from soup to nuts, right? The media company thinks about the results, much the way Ogilvy did. So I like this notion of, you know, we're going to start with a strategy. We're going to deliver the content. We're going to atomize. We're going to distribute. But it only counts if we really get it over the finish line and enchant both our internal and external target audiences. For us, that's to enchant them with our identity, with our purpose, with our spirit and our stories. And so that's a key piece of driving, again, the impressions and the perceptions of the place versus just the purveyors of random tactics.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there, and when it comes to building a world-class marketing team, are there essential components to that team that you feel like you can't live without?
In terms of functions or in terms of traits and characteristics?
In terms of functions and, you know, in terms of, you know, if it's content creation or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I have a few that we're really focused on here right now. I mean, I think you've got to be great and disciplined in the brand space and really understand what that means relative to just pure marketing or communications. Number two, I think the most special people around here are the emotive storytellers that can really enchant, and I keep using that word, but that, that can take a story and create feelings and create affinity and create connection to that subject matter. Number three, I think the content curators, the content strategists, again, of being able to aggregate content so that it ladders and that over time, those pieces of content create certain impressions, certain perceptions, certain reflections on a place. And then fourth, I'm really focused on folks who also want to make sure that what I think is so special about Aggieland here reaches the nation and not just the state of Texas. And so I want folks that really know our subject matter and are experts and that have a relationship and a craft, especially in the earned media space, to be able to deliver that and help still the outlets that are there tell our stories by choice. And so those folks in earned media, national PR, that are developing those relationships, having the understanding and being able to get us into the light are critical, especially in a land of 4,500 universities in America.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And, welcoming Mabel to the podcast here.
Yeah.
So I was telling Ethan before we started recording, we got a new puppy and, my wife left me to babysit, during this recording and she's been whining a lot. So, she might make an appearance here and there, but you use that word enchanted a lot. And, I remember when we had, Emily Richwine, from, Purdue on the show a while ago, it was probably about a year ago now. She mentioned that was a word that you had kind of introduced the team to. And so what does that mean for you?
Yeah, it goes back to trying to create an acronym or a mnemonic for what our priorities at Purdue were. And I frankly needed a second E besides Empower.
Yeah.
And I landed on Enchant. I brought it to the staff. They thought I was, you know, obsessed with fairy princesses or Disney or something at the time, but the definition is so beautiful. And it says to rouse and create an ecstatic admiration and demand for something. To rouse and create an ecstatic admiration and demand for something. I mean, that to me, that's the business we're in, right? We are rousing audiences and working to create their ecstatic admiration and demand for that which we produce. So I want them to be ecstatic about coming to school here, working here, moving here, partnering with us, buying our season tickets, whatever it may be. That to me is marketing, is to enchant on those levels versus just have it put out in the world and land. To me, this is the emotions that we want. And Emily Richwine is one of the finest in the world at doing that. When I interviewed her, when I knew I was sold, I said, "What do you like to do?" And she said, "I like to make people cry." I knew at that point in time, we had the emotion captured that we needed in such an emotional place like higher ed. So she is the enchanter of all. And we're always looking for that kind of person that can take a story and truly enchant with it.
Yeah. I love that, because it's not like just inspire or just like some generic word. It's a novel word. It's something that, you know, that sticks out. So that's good. Quick break here to dispel a myth. That myth is this: if you already have an internal videographer or video team at your college, then it doesn't make sense for us to work together. Now, you may be expecting me to say, "Oh, that's a myth. It's not true." Well, actually, in some cases, it is true. If you maybe have a robust video team, multiple people manning multiple different stations and operations, and you're telling stories, and when your marketing team has an idea for a video, you can get that pushed through the video team relatively quickly. Like, you're not going to be waiting around for months and months for them to get to that project in the queue. That's a perfect case where you're probably good. God bless you. Go take on the world. But maybe you're one of these schools where budgets are a little tighter. Roles are combined. Your social media manager is also your content creator. Those are two separate jobs, by the way. Well, that's what my friend Shar, who at the time we recorded this, she was doing both for the institution she works at. She was the social media manager and the videographer and the photographer. Since recording this with her, they've actually moved her into a full-time videographer, photographer, content creator role. And for her sake, I'm super pumped for her. But I'm going to let her tell you about her experience with our video storytelling subscriptions and how partnering with us, in addition to the internal video work she was already doing, helped her be able to focus on the many other priorities that she had. So here's Shar.
The video subscription idea was a real godsend for me. It's been kind of life-changing in a way. I don't know if that's too strong of a statement. On a couple of different levels, as a social media manager, it was really fantastic to have this entire campaign, if you will, of student testimonials. I know that for my channels, I'm going to get a new video every single month. There's a lot of content to produce and not a lot of content creators here. So having somebody who can take that portion off my plate, it's allowed me a little bit of room to breathe and maybe focus on some other projects. Not only do you get a fully edited testimonial, you also get a delivery of all of the B-roll that was taken of that student. For instance, we have this Culinary Institute. And one of the projects we wanted to do is to create just a short little video connected to a QR code that on all the little chocolates that we give out in the restaurant, or if they make chocolates for a special event or for our board members or for any meetings or graduation, they can scan this QR code and up pops this video of some like really beautiful slow-mo hands making chocolate and that sort of thing. And I was able to go into this B-roll and find some fantastic shots of one of our students who did a testimonial creating these bonbons and creating cakes, and you've got the batter going and you've got the chocolate drizzling. So I know that I'm going to be able to take that footage, resize it. I can resize it vertically if I need it. I can resize it into a 1x1 if I need it. I can color grade it however I need to fit my needs. And I really don't have to travel across the state to our Culinary Institute to do a whole new shoot, because I've got that B footage at my hands. So really, that's something that I could sit down, edit for a couple of hours, have it done, and check it off the list, which is fantastic.
So if you'd like to get like Shar and bring in an outside partner like Unveiled, you can go to unveiled.tv and book a call with me. That's UNVEILD.TV. All right, back to the show. Speaking of, you know, emotion and having an emotive brand platform, what does that look like? How does that play out, you know, for you? Why have an emotive brand platform?
Yeah. So, you know, and brand platform can get caught up in the marketing mumbo jumbo of things. I think for me, it starts with an insight. And to me, if you don't have that insight, or as Ogilvy said, if you don't have that big idea, you know, your marketing will pass like ships in the night. To me, it's having an insight that's distinct and it's emotional, and it unlocks a human truth about a place or a product for its audiences. And from there, then I want a distinct and emotive and compelling and insight-based campaign or platform so that we can all get in character. I use a lot of my same quotes, but one of my favorite ones is from Adam Grant. He says, worry less about getting in brand and worry more about getting in character. The brand platform allows us, especially at a complex place of 77,000 students and 4,200 faculty and multiple campuses and 19 colleges, et cetera, it allows us to get in Texas A&M character if we understand it and we've built it broad enough to have freedom within that framework. And from there, then we can ideate against a marketing campaign, core messaging, the core assets that bring it all together. But that platform to me is that umbrella, it's the vessel that allows us to put our content in and go to market as the best form of ourselves. Here is to go to the best form of A&M, right? When it all lands in your mailbox or your email, do you feel like we talk? Do you feel like what landed there fortifies the character, or does it actually confuse you?
Yeah.
The platform allows us to get in sync. It allows us to get in harmony.
Yeah. When it comes to differentiating, you know, with the brand and things like that, where do you look? Do you look to programs? Do you look to the types of people? Do you look to the culture? Like, how does Texas A&M think about differentiating its brand?
All of it. All of that. That's the brand, right? The total experience, the promises that we make, the experiences that we have, that which you put out in the market, the people we have, et cetera. You know, for us, I think the distinctness of this place is the spirit and the traditions that over 148 years have been crafted to create not just great Aggies and not just great, you know, graduates of their function, but great citizens. And I do believe that this place has a secret sauce in creating community when you're here and community when you leave. And that bond is as strong as anything I've seen. So that's an insight to me. That piece, that distinctiveness, again, goes back to this idea of insight. And you asked the other part around emotion. There's this great Piyush Pandey quote, I believe, from Khan a couple of years ago at Ogilvy. And he says, if the story's not great and if the story's not human, no technology will save you, not today or not in the future. You know, I've been in marketing environments that were relying on technology and didn't have a great story. And I saw them fester and be flat. It's those great stories. It's the feelings, not the facts, that allow us to, again, enchant. And so some of that distinctiveness, I think, is having an emotive execution of a distinct insight.
Yeah, I love that. And I look at a lot of things through the lens of the video world. And you know, one of the things I was just talking to someone about recently is just the kind of a red flag when working with videographers is like when they kind of lead with, I'm going to shoot this on a red camera or like a Arri Alexa or some like very like tens of thousands worth of dollars worth of camera equipment. And it's like, if your story isn't like, if you can't tell a good story, it really does not matter. Like, right. How many pixels were in that frame,
right.
You know? And I think that just applies across the board. Like if you don't focus on really what's the heart and the soul of your brand, it, you know, everything else is secondary to that.
Yeah. Let me look at shot on an iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. Or the video that has Robin Williams from Dead Poets Society in the background of all the things that you can do with an iPad, right? To me, the story is key. And if the story is not great and it's not human, nothing's going to save you at that point. Or conversely, if the story is great and the story is human, you got an incredible opportunity to really delight.
Yeah. Adding technology and, you know, bells and whistles to an existing good story, that's a winning combination. But yeah, there's no dressing up a bad story or a non-story, you know. So next on our list was, you know, these associated assets allowing the campus to execute the vision. What does that mean? Is that like visual assets like photography, B-roll and things like that? Or what does that look like?
Yeah, I think the underpinning of that is a couple things. One, I learned at Lilly, and I'm a big believer, and I think P&G and others would say the same thing, is that great brands are built centrally, they're built globally, and they're executed locally. And oftentimes the case, you know, that has to do with scale, that has to do with focus, that has to do with resources. And so when I talk about the assets, what I really want to be able to do is build an arsenal of the assets for an organization, whether it's this campus or whether it was my countries at Lilly, et cetera, to be able to take and localize those and then execute with excellence, right? I joke like admissions doesn't need a photographer, and I really believe that they need to understand young people and their families and their frustrations and their motivations and their aspirations better than anybody. Mm-hmm. We can be excellent at the delivery of the visual identity and the visual assets of the place. I love, there's a Don Draper where he says, "You came to us because we're better than this at you. We're better at this than you are." Mm-hmm. Let our creatives be unproductive until they are. I have a sense of that. You know, if I've got a team of 80 or 100. And a college has a team of four, I'm never going to expect them to do all the things that we could. And if I want them to get in character and I want them to go to market in an excellent fashion, a befitting fashion of A&M, then providing them the assets to localize with their expertise and then execute on their behalf is, I think, the equation to get that harmonious, excellent, flawless product out into the market. And so for me, it's having the content, it's having all of the associated assets, all of the guidelines, the photography, the videography, all of the social cues, et cetera, so that implementation and localization are easy. Don't make people think, make it frictionless. So that when they grab it, you know, I had this great kid or young man, I suppose, who was marketing for bands and orchestras at Purdue. And he said, "With all the stuff you provide us, I look bigger than I am. I'm a one-man team. But I've got you all as the Verizon network behind me with this arsenal of resources. I can market our product to the world with a professionalism and a scale and a breadth that I couldn't do on my own." So providing that to them is all in that spirit of, you know, in the first piece, great brands are built locally or built globally and centrally and executed locally. And the other part is just having an appreciation for the fact that, you know, they need to be experts in their craft and their expertise and their subject matter. We can provide the packaging to help us get in character and go and delight folks.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. When you have a library that everyone can access, it makes it really amplifies everybody's work like astronomically. I was talking to a marketing director a while ago, and she was like, we were just talking about having a B-roll, the importance of a B-roll library. She was like, "Yeah, we don't have one." And I was searching the other day for an hour for a picture of our mascot. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, just like one picture of the mascot." And she's like, literally took me an hour to find, right, to find one. You know, that's that's a lot of money when you scale that up over time.
Well, exactly,
when everyone's got scattered assets all over the place. You know, now with iPhones and stuff, it becomes a, even just like in our in my family, like trying to, you know, my parents take videos of my kids, and then, you know, my wife's parents take videos of the kids, and it's like trying to, everyone's got assets on their, mm-hmm, on their phones, you know, and there's, and it's tough to centralize all those. Do you guys have any sort of, is there any technology that you use to help centralize those assets, like a content management system or anything like that?
We're in the process. I saw it done well at Purdue with some partners that we have and some collaboration and some expertise in how to do it well. We're a little behind that here, and we'll get there. But having that, again, one, having it available, and two, having it excellent, right? You don't need, you know, 1,000 shots of the mascot. We need 50 that are excellent. When they go out to the market, people go, "That's excellent," right?
Yep.
So that having that scrutiny, having that scrubbing and that selection, that prioritization keeps you from having a garage full of crap, basically.
Yeah, for sure. And then let's talk about creating a marketing community. What does a thriving marketing community look like? Is that cross departmental, or what does that look like?
Yeah, no, I think having that sort of community that is acting like an orchestra. There's this Hal Lukoc, I think, quote. He says, "Nobody can whistle a symphony alone. It takes an entire orchestra." I've been using that analogy here a lot, but I think it's a good one. When we come together, if we unite and excite and cultivate a marketing community across the campus, across the system, whatever it is, that understands the mission, that understands what it means to be in character, that understands that they have a role in that, and people, you know, support that which they create, But if we come together and play our A&M symphony with flawless, unison, harmonious sound, that's what greatness looks like, right? The opposite is all of us running in our separate directions, telling the world what we think they need to hear or what a dean wants them to hear, et cetera. And that's like, 100 cats running through a wind chime factory. I'm looking for a symphony. I'm looking for the collective impression that goes out into the world and often hits the same individual to be harmonious and flawless and excellent. And so when we can do that, so many good things happen. Best practices occur, synergies and sharing occur. The leverage of those opportunities increases as well. But ultimately, it's about getting in sync, getting in harmony, and doing it together. I mean, we got 300 people on this campus in marketing communications. Well, why not get in sync and imagine the collective contribution that group can make when we do it? We should be expected to.
For someone who's listening, that's like, I know I need to do that, because this is I feel like this is a common thread that people gravitate towards just from this podcast, is like the need to unite the whole campus, different departments around one common marketing and communications language. Like, where do you start with that? If someone were to find themselves with an ununified campus, where does the work begin to start to bring that symphony together?
Yeah, it's not easy. Let's be clear. But to me, that's the journey we're on right now. We're about to set off on. And to me, it goes back to that quote I shared about being in character. If I go, and I use this example a lot, but if I go to work for Southwest Airlines tomorrow and their essence is freedom and I have an understanding of their character, it allows me to make decisions one way or the other. It allows me to act one way or another. I can personify what I think Southwest is supposed to be out in the market. Same thing is true here. If we can get this community in character, understanding the insights, understanding what our constituents want or have told us, understanding the pain that we are the pain reliever to, if you can spread that and get in character together, that's where that unison occurs. So from the very beginning, that's a lot of context. That's a lot of whys, right? That's about bringing people along. So we'll have a large group that come along on this journey with us this summer. And how do you just over time get people to act like at brand design versus design? They're in character, understanding what Texas A&M is supposed to say to the market and how it would say it versus how maybe they would say it. And so I watched it done well at Purdue, but it takes a lot of cultivation. It takes a lot of listening. It takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of understanding, explanation, context. It takes a lot of assets. It takes time. It takes getting together and having those conversations, understanding why we want to do that. It takes support from the top, right? So it's not easy, but it's wildly valuable when it's done right.
I love the idea of getting into character together. I think that's a really good way. I've never heard it put like that before, but that makes it so much more clear. I've had multiple conversations just in the last week with people that are like, we want to do more video content. Our Instagram is not what it should be, or YouTube or whatever, and we want to do more content. And then I'm kind of like, well, tell me about your audience. And that becomes a tougher conversation, because like I think people feel like they got to keep up with this content churn of getting stuff out there. But if you don't have the backing of what is the character that
right.
we need to get into, and what is the persona that we need to speak to, what are their problems, how do they move through this buyer journey, and like where are they coming from? Where are they going? How are they getting there? All this stuff.
Yeah, there's a depth to it, right? So his quote, Adam Grant's, when he says, be more concerned about, or be less concerned about being on brand. What I think he's saying is like, yeah, you can get the visual identity right. Like you can get the sign out front right. But if I walk into a place and I think it's a Target based on the sign out front and it's actually a Dollar General, like that's out of character, right? And I use that Southwest example, but when the essence is freedom, right? Well, that guides the decisions they make. Bags fly free. I can sit where I want. I can do the safety message as a rap or a poem, right? That guides my decisions, and that's in Southwest character. Those would be very out of character at United. Mm-hmm. So we think a lot about how do we get folks depth to understand the character of the place, and so they can make decisions based on it versus just the rigid brand guidelines, for instance. And I think when we do that, you feel a place, right? I've heard somebody say, you know, could you imagine a Nike hotel? I go, yeah, I can. I can get into character what a Nike hotel would look like. There's others that I can't. Well, it's because I understand their character. So for us, if I can get more and more folks there, then we are rowing together. Then there is compound interest based on the things that we do daily.
Yeah, I heard that too, the Nike hotel thing. I don't know who posted about it. I wonder if it was like Seth Godin or something, but he's like, you can, everyone can imagine a Nike hotel, but if Hilton were to make a shoe,
right,
you couldn't really figure out what that would be.
Yep. That's right. It was Seth.
Yeah.
I think if we can do that, and then you can, you know, so one of the examples I used last year was when Purdue got into racing, you know, we sponsored a SRX car with Elio Castroneves and Tony Kanaan in it. And then we sponsored a NASCAR with Ryan Preece at the Indianapolis, race, the Brickyard. Mm-hmm. And we get asked about that. And we say, well, first of all, we've got the only ABET accredited motorsports engineering degree in the nation, right? Like, this is our bread and butter. But two, engineering, Indianapolis, like, that's in our character, right? Hardworking, gritty. You know, if a, you know, my undergraduate university, Willamette in Salem, Oregon, you know, home to the Willamette Valley and the best Pinots in the world, gets into racing, you'd say, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? Because it's not in character for them. Up there it was. So what's so in character here? What makes it so A&M? What makes it so Aggie? And how do we understand that as we convey that to the world?
What is an Aggie?
it's a different articulation of an agricultural individual.
Got it. Okay. That's kind of what I thought, but I was like, I've heard people say like, go Aggies and things. I'm like, what exactly is that?
Yeah. You see them across the land grants, right? Utah State, New Mexico State.
Yeah.
I think Davis maybe as well, but yes, it's just an abbreviation or a little bit more fun way of talking about somebody who's in agriculture.
I had Kate Young on the podcast a few months ago, and then it just inspired me to look up what is a boilermaker, you know, and I was like, literally people that make boilers, you know, it's like, that was interesting.
I don't know if you looked up the story, but it was a derogatory term after Purdue went down and kicked the hell out of Wabash. Oh. And it was in the newspaper the next day that the boilermakers, which was supposed to be sort of a derogatory term as if they had just brought down a bunch of grizzly adults and not students, had played football against them, and it stuck from there. So it was sort of a derogatory way of saying these big burly, you know, adults who came from West Lafayette came down and beat up on our Wabash boys.
Yeah, that's funny. Cool. And then I know a big part of this, you know, kind of your vision is this national earned media strategy. So I kind of wanted to unpack this a little bit. Like, what does that mean? Why is that a priority?
Yeah, I mean, it starts with General Welsh, and one of his far horizon priorities is that that A&M is an incredible institution, but great national universities have great national reputations, and when we're doing as many incredible things as the people and the researchers are here at A&M, you want to be a constant in the national conversation. And so synchronizing that, being intentional and deliberate about what conversations do we want to be a part of? What do we want to be known for? Why should people care? Why should you call us first when you've got 4,500 other choices, right, is key. It also, I've worked on smaller brands in the past. I like turnarounds. And one of the things I've always used is a lot of places I've gone, you hear people say, well, we're just so humble. You know, we don't tell our story very well, et cetera. And I just don't think it's cute to be the best kept secret, right? Like, if you've got a kick-ass product, if you've got a kick-ass place, I want the world to know about it on our terms and in character, again, not in braggadocious, but also, you know, all steak and some sizzle.
Right.
But to me, the things that are happening on this campus are world changing. And I want to make sure that we lend our craft to making sure that they're part of and they're constant in the national conversation so that we are vital and we're relevant and we're looked to you know, as one, experts, and two, as change agents. So I just, I think the nation needs to know more about this place. I didn't know as much about it 4 months ago or 8 months ago, sitting there in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And when you get down here, you say, this place is incredible. Let's get that message out beyond the confines of the state of Texas. So that it can have the full impact that I know is our potential.
Yeah. It reminds me, I was working with, so I live in a city called Troy in Michigan, yeah. And Troy has this really, because I used to do photography for the city. And so I would go on these tours and stuff of like the Department of Public Works and the water and, you know, and all this stuff that goes on. And like, they have such an interesting like way of saving people money. It's like they have a volunteer firefighting department, so like all of these firefighters completely volunteer. Mm-hmm. they have all these systems for like, you know, creating efficiencies. And I said to them, I was like, why are you not telling this story? Like, this is like, and they hadn't created any really like videos or anything around it. And I'm like, man, I've been poking at them for years about, I'm like, this is a cool place to live if nothing else because of like how you run the city in a cost effective way. There's a lot of other things I like about Troy, its diversity and all this stuff, but I remember just that I'm like, I was excited doing this. I'm like, I want other people to be excited, like, when totally. You realize something's cool, it's like, let's point the camera at something totally. Cool.
Yeah, I don't think it's cute to be the best kept secret. I don't want our marketing to be a tree that falls in the woods and no one's there to see it. Mm-hmm. And I fundamentally believe that the best products don't win, the best marketed ones do. And so we've got an incredible product. I want more and more in this nation and globally to appreciate it and understand it and to be roused and have an ecstatic admiration and demand for it. That's what we do. That's our craft. If you're going to pay us and all of us to do what we do, that is one of the outcomes we should achieve, especially when you're blessed with such an incredible place and such an incredible product.
And Texas A&M, you mentioned last week when we talked in our pre-call that you guys are like top five in like national conversations around certain topics. Can you give us a little rundown of like what some of those are?
Yeah, I mean, what we're doing is looking specifically at research themes that are a priority for us, where we've made major investments, where we have an expertise. And as you and I discussed, what we were looking at externally was, what's our share in the volume of those themes, internet media, social media, and what's our share in engagement of those? And so we saw some good results, you know, based on, as a baseline of what we've been doing versus, I think, in the future, when we commission our efforts against it, how much better can we do? But, you know, in four of the 15 areas that we looked at, whether it was climate or space, food, energy, water, nexus, national security, hypersonics, microelectronics, agricultural elements, et cetera, four of the 15 that we looked at, we were number one or number two in volume and number one or number two in seven of the categories for engagement. So it was a nice baseline. Allows us to see what's getting out in the world. And when it does, is it interesting? Is it impactful? Is it shared? And where we have opportunity to do better, either from the volume standpoint, the engagement standpoint, or better. And from there, we can prioritize too. I'm not sure we'll be known for 15 things, mm-hmm. at least in the near future. So when you ask somebody, what's A&M excellent at? When do I call them first? What are those three or four major research thematic areas that were top of mind? And can we exacerbate that and exploit that and really build the perceptions of our excellence because it's here? Mm-hmm. So that's some of the prioritization that we're doing as we speak.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. So I would love to get a just kind of an overview of like, what are some of the major content levers that you know of right now that A&M is pulling? So I know you guys have like video storytelling kind of efforts. You mentioned earlier, multiple podcasts and things like that. So like, where are you active in terms of executing on that storytelling and the brand building?
Yeah, I think where the muscle is today is pronounced in a couple areas. One, our social media team, with their followers in particular, has been excellent from an engagement standpoint. If Rival IQ and Sprout and others will show us where we stand. But across the platforms that the place has prioritized to date, the content with the followers that we have has been incredibly engaging. And so that's encouraging. Our Texas A&M Today is one of the vehicles to tell the world what's going on at A&M. And it does a nice job of capturing that set of news in a central place. I think the potential is much of what you just highlighted. Our presence in YouTube today is ignored. It's neglected. It has been. And coming from where I come from, that's to me just a major opportunity for marketers and video storytellers and content curators for the future to say, you know, the eyeballs are there. It's the second most followed social network in the world. And what is it? 98% of 15-year-olds and up in the United States have been on YouTube at least once in the last month, right? So it's going to catch on. It's not going anywhere, right?
Right.
So being excellent in our video storytelling is a priority. We're launching, we plan in the fall, at least one, if not multiple podcasts. So there's opportunities to do that as well. But, you know, for us moving on, it's going to be, how do we attract new audiences, the audiences that we want, the decision makers, the policy makers, the influencers, the rankers, so to speak, that maybe we haven't focused on in the past. And can we couple and connect our content with their interests? That's a big one for us at this point.
I love it. Yeah. And I noticed that, if nothing else, like, cause we have a YouTube channel for this podcast and I don't pay, it's got like 40 subscribers. I don't really pay attention. It's more just like a hosting, you know, it's just a place for us to host the episodes. But I do notice, like, when I search certain people's names, you know, if I'm looking up content by some guests that I had previously, very often, like, the episode that they were on this show comes up very high in the search results. And it really is, beyond just being a platform for content consumption, YouTube is really great for just showing up in search results too.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so for
we hatched that at Purdue. I mean, it was 2 years ago that we were really pleased with 2 million views of our content in the year. And then last year that team put up 55 million views.
Yeah.
Of their content, including their institutional spot that had 30 million views or just about to crack 30 million views. To me, it's a frictionless, centralized platform that, when well curated, has incredible eyeballs. And if the content is meaningful and you follow their guidelines, their ABCDs, you know, you can capture incredible impressions there. And so, you know, for me, I want to be excellent anywhere there's opportunity. And that's one where we haven't completely exploited. So building a team that wants to do that incredibly well moving forward will be a priority. The other thing I'd say, as we partnered with YouTube and Google in the past, that's just on, like, the storytelling piece, the whole educational content piece. I think universities, the vast majority, have not captured either. And we do some incredible things here that the world can care about. For instance, right, we have a meat sciences department. I have a vision, and I think many do here too, is, you know, just like you may go to YouTube when you're trying to do your home plumbing needs, the likelihood you're going to be served up a video from Roto-Rooter is really high. And who are you going to call, right, when it comes to the point of, I can't do this alone? Well, the same thing here. You know, the topics of where we're excellent, many of them are wild and incredible and innovative, et cetera. And this is true too. But boy, what if we own barbecue and brisket and smoking on YouTube moving forward? And we've got the experts to do it. So that educational content piece, I think, is so interesting. And people follow people. They don't follow organizations. And so I do believe some of the people here are worthy of that moving forward, just as they are on every college campus.
That's really cool. I like that. I'm really into, especially lately, college is really entering real life conversations, you know, that people are talking about. I mean, just like you said, like, people are, there's a bunch of people that are interested in meat and smoking meat, and there's a lot of, I'm watching Top Chef right now. I'm going through all the Top Chef episodes, and so, you know, in like some of the judging comments, you know, you get some little food science tidbits about how this goes limp if you cook it this way, but if you cook it this way, it's, you know, different. And I'm like, that's really interesting to me, like, what, you know, what would it look like for a school that upholds, like, you know, science and things like that to kind of own those conversations? I think that's a great idea.
The reason I know how to tie a bow tie is YouTube. The reason I was able to get a stuck faucet off was YouTube. The reason I know how to smoke a, you know, a big brisket or a beef tenderloin, YouTube. So what do we know better than most, and how can we help and do it in a very relevant and scale fashion? I think that potential is there.
Cool. I love it. Well, this has been great. So where can people find you if they want to connect with you at?
LinkedIn, R. Ethan Braden, easy to find there. I'm not an interesting follow anywhere else. So LinkedIn is a good spot, or go on the A&M website. You can find me if you got a question or want a partner or you hated what I had to say, whatever it may be, but I've gotten a few of those over the years. LinkedIn would be great. I really appreciate this opportunity and all that you're doing, John.
Absolutely. Really appreciate you being here. It was a fun episode. Thanks for letting Mabel crash our party too.
Absolutely. She's a highlight. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Three things I want to give you before you go. Number one, reminder to sign up for my free weekly newsletter all about creating content that resonates emotionally with your audience. And you can do that at unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Number two, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone. Share it with your team, your boss, your dog, whatever. And if you're not already subscribed, I'd love for you to do that. Number three, reach out to me. If you have comments, questions, you want to talk about a video project, whatever, my email is john@unveiled.tv. John is spelled J-O-H-N. Or follow me on LinkedIn. If you're searching for me, my last name is spelled A-Z-O-N-I. That's all for today. And I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast. Thanks.